Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. In our local community, who comes to the Abbey regularly and attends these talks, we've been exploring a sutra, a Buddhist scripture recently called The Lion's Roar of Queen Shrimala, which is very unusual for two reasons. One is that it describes the enlightenment of a layperson. Most of the enlightenment you read about in the sutras have to do with either monks or Buddhas, and they are usually male. Most of the sutras were written either before the year one or within 8 centuries afterwards, and that Queen Shrimala is a woman. And in this sense, she expresses the Mahayana ideal that enlightenment and religious practice is for everyone, of all, of both genders, and of any age, of any social class, and by extension, because she was in India and we are here, of any country or ethnicity. In the sutra, the queen makes 10 vows in the very beginning, so that she has met the Buddha, he has appeared before her, and she is going to embrace his great doctrine. And in embracing this doctrine, she makes 10 vows of ordination. And we've been going through each one of the vows, and today we'll be talking about the 5th vow. Queen Shrimala's 5th vow, and this is a direct quote, is not to be stingy. She says, I will not be stingy, although I have little sustenance. And when you compare other translations, this idea of refraining from stinginess extends itself to covetousness. The queen states that she will not allow any thought of covetousness to arise between now, at the time of making her vow, and until she is enlightened. In another translation of the sutra, she vows never to be reluctant to give. Her vows seem to center specifically around the giving of food, but they also imply cultivating contentment with what she has rather than giving rise to greed, to covetousness, and the inevitable dissatisfaction and unhappiness which these attitudes of mind generate. If I only have a little food, she says, I will not be reluctant to give. Her ordination vow to refrain from stinginess and all that it implies then becomes our teaching for the day, and that is what we're going to examine. Being stingy, of course, you look in the dictionary, means to be unwilling to give or to spend, and it is a synonym for ungenerous or being unwilling to share. To share means to give a portion of something to another or others, or to possess in common with others. Giving or generosity, we call it dana in the Buddhist languages, both Sanskrit and Pali, is the fundamental ethical idea in Buddhism. It's the foundation of both moral cultivation as well as deeper spiritual cultivation. It all begins with dana, with generosity. Traditionally, in Buddhist countries, monastics become the key focus of generosity because they embody, for most people, those who are completely dedicated to the cultivation of spiritual life, of religious life. But generosity in Buddhism is not limited to monastics or to one group, nor does it have any particular focus. It is deeply encouraged towards family, towards friends, towards strangers, towards guests, towards the poor, towards the homeless, towards animals, towards everyone. One of the primary unifying threads of many Asian Buddhist communities is their devotion to making positive contributions both to the monastic community and to society in order to better themselves and to help and improve those who are the recipients of their generosity. When I was in Malaysia at the temple where my late master was ordained, I was sitting in there and lots of people come to this temple every day, maybe thousands. And I was sitting there and a man came up to me and introduced himself. He was a Chinese man, and like many Malaysian Chinese, he spoke English. And I asked him, you know, what he did. And he said, well, to tell you the truth, Reverend, I'm a millionaire. I've made quite a bit of money, and I'm incredibly happy that I have made all this money because it means that I can help my family and help my society and help this temple. And the ability I have to give is a joy every day. And I thought, I wish I could clone you and bring you back to the United States with me, because your view is very refreshing. Prosperity is something to the Buddhist, as in the case of this man, that we share with other people. We don't just keep it to ourselves, because keeping it to ourselves results in suffering. It is suffering. Generosity is a practice which not only benefits others, but it also brings we, the donors, joy and contentment in the practice of generosity. If you have a chocolate bar, it always tastes better when you share it with someone else. Generosity wears away possessiveness, and it cultivates an open-hearted and kind attitude towards everything and towards everyone. And it is a natural thing to do. We are naturally generous. Regardless of what the world looks like today or the experiences that you've had in your life, people are naturally generous. They're naturally kind. Monastics, too, learn to cultivate generosity. In the Mahayana tradition, which we are members of, the bodhisattva, the being who is focused on enlightenment, shares the fruits of his or her religious practice with all beings. No matter what kind of merit, no matter what kind of spiritual fruits you are able to cultivate for yourself, you're supposed to share those with all sentient beings. You don't keep a thing for you, because you are dedicated to the enlightenment of everyone. And in one sense, everyone's enlightenment is more important than the singular bodhisattvas is. In a monastic community, all of the senior monks who are able teach. They all perform religious ceremonies. They give counseling and help to anyone and to everyone who comes to the monastery. They instruct younger monastics in religion. We all follow an ethic here of selfless service to the monastic community and to the lay community. And by selfless service, I mean service which is intended to teach you how to be selfless, how to not hold on to yourself. We are supported by donations, but this is not our pay. You know, we live this way because this is our ancient practice. This is what the Buddha did, what the Buddha and his disciples did. And the practice of generosity continues to teach us that we must continually give and be generous and teach and share the Dharma with everyone if we want to make progress in our own religious life. In our particular tradition of Buddhism, we believe in Buddha nature. Buddha nature is that essence which permeates everyone. It permeates everything, and everything, everyone shares equally in Buddha nature. We all share equally in it. We all have the same amount, which happily is immeasurable. Because we all share it equally, we are all equal in Buddha nature and in our potential for realizing Buddha nature to the full. Because we all share it equally, because we all share the same spiritual essence, generosity is simply a way of expressing that sharing. And it is a way of expressing our oneness with each other and with the whole world. Generosity celebrates our interconnectedness, whether, regardless of what country we may come from, or our background, or our age, or our gender, or what we have been through, or what we think. We are still, in terms of Buddha nature, each and every one of us, deeply and intimately interconnected. Our oneness with each other, our oneness with our own divine nature, and we don't use that word divine too much around here because it's actually a Christian term, and we're Buddhists, not Christian. We use the term Buddhahood. To be stingy, to be possessive, to be selfish, is the Buddha taught to suffer. Because it is to deny the very thing that unites us all, regardless of our age, gender, nationality, race, sexual orientation, life experience, occupation. You can just go down the line and define every differentiating human characteristic. We are all one in our Buddhahood, and we each express that Buddhahood in our own unique way. And we are all deeply interconnected, and none of us are separate from each other. Zen Master Dogen, the founder of our tradition, wrote charity, which was his word for giving, dana, is the opposite of covetousness. We make offerings, although we ourselves get nothing whatsoever. There is no need to be concerned about how small the gift may be, so long as it brings true results. For even if it is only a single phrase or a verse of teaching, it may be a seed to bring forth good fruit both now and hereafter. Similarly, the offering of only one coin or a blade of grass can cause the arising of good. For the teaching itself is the true treasure, and the true treasure is the very teaching. We must never desire any reward, and we must always share everything we have with others. It is an act of charity to build a ferry or a bridge, and all forms of industry are charity if they benefit others. Generosity in Buddhism is so important that it is one of our moral precepts. All of our lay trainees take a precept about generosity. The monks do. There is a teaching called one of the paramitas, that which carries us to the other shore. Generosity is also one of those teachings. Our precepts say, do not be mean in giving either dharma or wealth. To be mean in giving. Material generosity is important, but also so is spiritual generosity. Spiritual generosity is the willingness to share our spiritual riches with each other and encourage each other as we face the difficulties and problems of being human. I'm sure you've all noticed, as someone once said to me, this is not the good ship Lollipop. Things are hard here. This is true whether we are monks or students or family members or in relationships or co-workers or members of a society or culture or country. Our duty and our joy is to share our practice with each other. Because if it's a real practice, it will not only help us, but it is also going to help others bring suffering to an end. At least reduce it, but perhaps even bring it to an end. The highest form of giving in Buddhism is fearlessness. Because a person who is fearless does not hold anything back, and they live courageously. And they live their life to the best of their ability. They share what they have with others of themselves. They help other beings. They are dedicated to ending suffering for themselves and all sentient beings together. And as such, are a model for all of us. And when you think of the people who you admire in the world, and in history, fearlessness is often one of their great qualities. As I said, generosity is both a foundation for Buddhist morality and it is a precept. But Buddhism does not teach blind generosity or unskillful generosity. The whole purpose of Buddhist practice is to understand what causes human beings to suffer and then to cease from doing that. And then to help other beings do likewise. So generosity has to be tempered in this way so that when we are generous, when we are practicing generosity, we're doing it both with compassion and with wisdom. We want to make sure that we are giving in such a way that it does not create more suffering for ourselves or for other beings. So we have to learn how to do this skillfully, wisely, benevolently, with care, compassion, with wisdom. To understand this more deeply, one has to learn how greed creates suffering and then practice non-greed in a generous way. How hate creates suffering, and then practice non-hate in a loving way. How ignorance creates suffering, and practice non-ignorance in a wise way. We seem to live in a packaged society, in a consumer society, in which people are constantly trying to sell us something. And there is a lot of spirituality that is also packaged in this way. So there are many packages available to you nowadays, but many of them are simply a way to change the wrapping paper or the label on the container of suffering that we hold. The idea of Buddhist practice is actually to change the contents of the container, to change it from the poison of greed, anger, and delusion into compassion, love, and wisdom, from that which makes us sick to that which gives us life. And we do this by working on ourselves, by looking at our own minds, at our own experiences, by our thinking, our speech, and our actions, by studying the Dharma, by coming to grips with our own greed, our own hate, and our own delusion, which is always difficult and painful, and learning through the practice of the Buddha Dharma how to transform these from being hindrances into enabling opportunities. The Buddha taught the noble truth of suffering. Well, suffering does not ennoble one until and unless one understands what to do with it. When one understands suffering in such a way that it brings suffering to an end, suffering then becomes ennobling. It can teach us and not cripple us. The world of samsara, the world of birth and death, is a world of wandering. It is a process, not a place, in which our intentions and our attitudes of mind create a reality, a seeming reality, into which we step and then live for a while until it caves in on us. And then we try to recreate it. We go on and on doing this, day after day, year after year, to us who believe in rebirth, birth after birth, life after life. Intention creates the world we live in. Living a life which is dedicated to greed, to possessiveness, to selfishness, generates more greed, more possessiveness, and more selfishness. It is simple cause and effect. When that caves in, people suffer. But few people realize that it is the process itself, this process of wandering, not so much and recreation, not so much the events that cause the suffering, and that our investment in that process, our creation of that reality, is the fundamental force that drives that suffering. The suffering that we see and we experience is the consequence of that force. It is the consequence of our intentions. The cause is ourselves, our intentions, our greed. If we want to change that, then we have to change our intentions and practice non-greed. An excellent word for non-greed is generosity. And by the way, our word for non-hate is loving-kindness. And for non-ignorance or non-delusion is wisdom. When you look at history, you see that wars occur when a world of hate, which has been created by people, caves in on them. World War II was a war in which the entire world was at war. Hate had caved in on human beings, and they had to deal with it. When greed caves in on us, we have financial depressions, and we have economic crises. What about delusion? Well, delusion is that force of ignorance which lulls us to sleep. Delusion is not recognizing when greed and when hate are arising. To not be mindful that actions of body, speech, and mind, which allow the process of greed and hate to continue reforming and cave in on us, causing suffering, that is what delusion is. And because of that, delusion is far more dangerous. Greed is real simple. You know, it's right in your face. There's nothing like greed. You know, let's make a deal. It's pure greed. And in that sense, there's a kind of purity and innocence about it. I'm not recommending this. Just saying. You know what you're dealing with. Hate is also like that, in that we can recognize it because it is naked in the way that it is. But delusion is far more dangerous. We continue to wander with greed and with hate, forming, reforming, caving in on us. And in the meantime, between the times when these things are caving in on us, we go to sleep because we are lulled. Well, greed's not too bad. Well, hate's not too bad. Until we decide to wake up. This is why the Buddha called enlightenment awakening. He was the awakened one. We all have to decide to wake up to ourself, to what is going around us, and not be lulled to sleep. This is not the good ship lollipop. So we wake up to greed, and we look at it, and we do something about it in our own life. We wake up to hate. We do something about it in our own life. We wake up to delusion. To all these three passions as they appear in our own life and experience. And we practice generosity, loving kindness, and wisdom. That is how we change it. That is how we correct it. Generosity is a way for everyone to practice non-attachment and renunciation. Non-attachment does not mean that you leave the world, all your friends and family, your job, and you all leave behind all your possessions and you go into a monastery, although we'd love to have you. It means that things, that people, that ideas are not our possessions. They are not ours. When we cling to them, when we try to hold on to them, when we try to make them the way we would like them to be, that is when we suffer. If we are not attached to things, we will not be upset when they meet with their impermanent destiny in this impermanent world. This world is impermanent. And since everything is impermanent, it never stays as it is. How long does your new car stay new? How long does the new computer make us happy? How long does our job satisfy us until the problems that we encounter begin to reduce its shine? How long do our relationships endure before we encounter difficulties within them? Everything is impermanent. Everything is conditioned. By letting go of clinging to things and people, this opens our hearts and enables us to give, because we are not trying to hold on. And in giving, both we and others are transformed. We would all love to think that we are not attached to our possessions. But when they get damaged, or when they change, when somebody drops your new iPhone, that's where you know how you're doing. That's where, in religious training, where, as they say, the rubber hits the road. Here it is. You hand your new iPhone to your best friend and they drop it on the marble floor. How are things doing at that point? We would like to think that we are not attached to people, but when they do something that we don't want them to do, we get upset about it. Practicing non-attachment is learning how to let go. And when we let go and we do not cling, not only are we generous, but that generosity makes us happy, and it makes other people happy too. Trusting others gives them the gift of space and freedom and dignity. We have to recognize that everything is impermanent. Everything ends. Every relationship ends. Every idea creates an identity which we can then become enslaved to if we choose to. Do we want to be enslaved by our things? Thoreau said that men become the tools of their tools. Use a personal computer and you know exactly what Thoreau meant. The question is not whether to have these things or not, but to cultivate them in a way that does not create suffering. And this is through non-attachment, not clinging. Queen Sirmala made her vow not to be stingy. Whether her vow was focused on her food or on her very life doesn't really matter. The Buddha's teaching remains the same. Cultivate wise generosity. Share wisely. Practice non-greed. Practice non-attachment. Understand the most valuable thing we possess is the only thing that we possess, and that is our own Buddha nature. That is the only thing that we truly possess. And we don't even really possess it. It's just what we are. When we share that with others, when we share the fact that we all share the same nature, no matter who we are, no matter where we are, no matter what the venue, the occasion, the context, we are practicing the Buddha's teaching and encouraging ourselves and others to live generously and to live fearlessly. May you all do so. May you all be well and peaceful and happy, and come and see us again.